Sasquatch is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the so-called knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject.
It was late at night. We had parked down this game trail, and both of us had our windows cracked. And we had heard, it first started on Woody's side of the car, we heard obvious footsteps coming in. And I'd pulled my pistol out, Woody had pulled his pistol out, and Woody had rolled his window down, and actually had pointed out the window to whatever was coming in towards the car. When I went to bed for almost 2 months, I'd close my eyes, I would replay the growl in my head. I mean, it affected me that much to where I just couldn't get this out of my mind. I couldn't get it. I mean, it really affected both of us. Threatening, very. It was louder. It was longer. It kind of reminded me, and I hate to say this because I'm not a paranormal guy, but like a demonic growl is what I thought. Mm-hmm. It was very deep. It was very nothing like I've ever heard before. Mm-hmm. Out his window off his driver's side, and he kind of looks over at me, and his face is completely white, and he says, do you see what I'm looking at over here? And I looked over on his side of the car, kind of lean over and look through the window, and it just kind of looked like a monkey in a tree. I mean that's the only way I can describe it. So we had decided to leave, and when we went to leave, this thing had stepped out in the road, and I can tell you it's the biggest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And when it stepped out in this road,
today's show is an interview with Wes Germer. Wes is the co-host of Bigfoot Hotspot Radio with his brother Woody Pratt and Bigfoot researcher Will Jevning. I discovered the show back when I was really getting into Bigfoot last summer, and Wes and Woody are two of the more down-to-earth guys I've heard talk on a Bigfoot podcast. They are intelligent, and they've actually had a really interesting sighting. So I thought it'd be fun to get Wes on the show and just talk to him about their sighting and what they saw that night, and a little bit about the community and what he thinks of the topic in general. Hope you enjoy.
Oh, gosh. We started that, I want to say the beginning of 2014 is when we started it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we changed it to Sasquatch Chronicles.
Right.
So we're trying to brand Sasquatch Chronicles more than Bigfoot Hotspot Radio.
Right.
But it's somewhat in a semi-transition at the moment. But yeah, I would say beginning of 2013 is when we had actually started it. It wasn't long after our encounter.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that. I'm talking with Wes Germer of Sasquatch Chronicles Bigfoot Hotspot Radio, one of the number one shows on Blog Talk Radio. How did you get connected with Will Jevning to begin with? Was it just through having him on the show?
No, the thing with Will's kind of a funny story. I had contacted Will. Woody and I had come across these hand-twisted trees. We'd come across some footprints when we were out just riding our motorcycles out in the middle of nowhere, and we didn't really know what to make of it. And both of us had never seen anything like that. And I had contacted Will, and basically I told him what we had seen and told him about some of the footprints. And I said, hey man, I don't know what to make any of this. And that's kind of where mine and Will's relationship started. I didn't know who he was. I just thought was a guy that lived in the area, and but come to find out, he knows a little bit more than what I had originally thought. But that's how we had originally met.
Will Jevning is a researcher who has written. I've read all three of his books. I'm on the last, probably. I think I'm on at the very end. I've got 20% left of his Notes from the Field book on my Kindle, and I've read his two shorter books. So let's get into your sighting, though, because we're going to probably come back to it a few more times throughout the show. So I want to talk a little bit, at least at the top of the show, and I'm sure you've told this story 1,000 times and you're sick to death of recounting your sighting.
No, I have told it a lot of times, and a lot of people have heard it. I apologize in advance, but because you asked, Seth, I'll go ahead and tell you. Woody and I were up in, my brother's name is Woody, and him and I were up basically in the middle of nowhere. And I'll kind of give you the short version, but we had been, Gosh, I wish there was a really short version I could give you. So we had pulled up, we had parked in this down this game trail, and it's November, and out here in Washington in November, all of the leaves are off the trees. I mean, it's pretty wide open. It's not quite as thick as it is right now. If you go out, in the woods, it's pretty dense. It's pretty thick. But November, it's not quite like that. It's pretty open. And it was late at night. We had parked down this game trail, and both of us had our windows cracked. And we had heard, it first started on Woody's side of the car. We heard obvious footsteps coming in towards his side of the car. Off to my right, we could hear obvious footsteps coming in on my side of the car. Each of the footsteps sounded different. Like on Woody's side, it sounded really heavy. It sounded really big. It sounded, you know, you can almost feel every step it was taking. On my side, it wasn't like that. It was more quick-stepped. It was very light, you know, as it was walking in towards the car. And in front of the car, we had heard a completely different set of footsteps coming in towards the car. And as we're sitting there, we were trying to figure out what was going on, because we weren't Bigfoot believers at that point. I, you know, if you had said Sasquatch, I probably had no idea what you're talking about. If you said Bigfoot, I kind of had a general idea of what you're talking about. But as we're sitting there, all these things start going through my mind. Is it the military? Is this a bear? Is this, you know, people? What's going on? Why are they coming in? And they're making it very obvious they're coming in towards the car. And they're about 15, 20 feet out from the car. So these three footsteps, all three of them start coming in. And him and I would sit and talk back and forth. We'd whisper back and forth, trying to figure out, you know, what is it? What do you think it is? Do you think it's a bear? What do you think's going on here? And every time we'd whisper, anytime we would talk, the footsteps would stop. And so I was starting to get unnerved at that point. And we'd pulled our guns out. We had pulled our pistols out at that point. We had a lot of guns in the car. I think we were hunting the month prior. I don't think I ever took my gun out of his car. We had all these guns in his car. And I hate to sound like we're a bunch of hillbillies out there, but
he had an arsenal.
Yeah, we had an arsenal in the car, you know.
Bazooka.
We're a small militia out there. But we're sitting in the car, and I'd pulled my pistol out. Woody had pulled his pistol out, and Woody had rolled his window down and actually had pointed out the window to whatever was coming in towards the car. I told him, no, don't, let's not. The last thing I want is, even though I just pulled my pistol out, the last thing I want right now is a gun battle. So I told him, don't do that. Don't point it out the window. Don't keep it down low. And as we're trying to figure out what's going on.
Hold on. Let me stop here real quick. Why? What made you think there would be a gun? Did you think it was other people in the woods, or did you, you know, you didn't want to open up on like a grizzly? What?
I thought it was people.
Okay.
That was kind of going through my mind, because it was obvious footsteps coming in. It wasn't, you know, it didn't sound like a bear. We don't have, I guess we have grizzlies if you go way up north. Mm-hmm. But where we're at, we mainly have black bear, and they aren't really that big.
Okay.
But this sounded like obvious people. I mean, that's what was going through my mind was, I was trying to rationalize what I was hearing and trying to place what I was hearing. But at the moment, people really didn't make sense. But it's all I could rationalize that was going on.
Right.
That's actually what was going on. And as we had sat there, and all of this happened relatively quick, Seth. It's not like, you know, we had time to sit and really think about things. All of this is happening throughout this whole encounter. It's like one thing after another after another.
Right.
But we're sitting there, and behind the car, we start hearing... We had pulled off on the right side of the road, and there's this huge pile of leaves from that had come down off the brush and everything that are sitting on the side of the road. And probably, and I'm guessing, I want to say about 30 feet behind the car. Now, we're parked at an angle, so the butt end of the car is kind of up, and we're kind of pointed down into this, into kind of darkness. We're kind of facing the mountain, and we're faced down this game trail. But behind the car, we had heard, it sounded like something came out of the brush. And it didn't sound like it was on four legs. It sounded like a person crawling is the only way I can liken it. It sounded like a definite person, a huge person, but it sounded like it was crawling. That's the only thing I could you know, I was trying to sit and again, all of this happened really quick, but at the moment I was thinking, this doesn't sound like an animal on 4 feet. It sounds like someone coming through through that pile of leaves on the side of the car. It sounded like it was just coming through like a bulldozer, and it was just coming towards the back of the car. You could hear this thing coming, and it stopped and it had growled at us. And the growl that I heard isn't like any growl I've ever heard before in my life. And that kind of threw me off for the moment. I kind of stopped and I looked over Woody, and this thing moves up again, and it moves probably another 5-10 feet, and it stops and it growls again at us. The growl changed. It wasn't, you know, most animals, they have one growl. When they're pissed, they growl. When they're, in danger or they're in fear, they growl. This growl changed. It wasn't the same as the first growl. The second growl was very threatening, it was louder, it was longer. And
what's the pitch on this? I mean, is it, you know, high pitched, or I mean, what kind of growl are we talking
about? Very deep.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would you compare it to? Like lion or Harley starting up?
Yeah.
Chopper.
It kind of reminded me, and I hate to say this because I'm not a paranormal guy, but like a demonic growl is what I thought. Mm-hmm. It was very deep. It was very nothing like I've ever heard before. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would compare it to. I'm probably like a demonic growl, I guess you'd hear like in the movies.
Sure.
But it had and every time it started getting closer and closer to the car, it moved up again. It had growled at us again, and the third growl was very... here's how bad the growl was. When I went to bed for almost 2 months, I'd close my eyes. I would replay the growl in my head. I mean, it affected me that much to where I just couldn't get this out of my mind. I couldn't get... It affected both of us. But after it growls a third time, I turn over to Woody and I start telling him... I start almost saying to him, back up, let's get out of here, I'm done. I'm done playing. And before I did that, it had moved up, and it's probably like a foot or two away from the back bumper. And when it had growled, I know both of us physically felt the growl. I know I physically felt it. It's almost like being hit with like a sound wave, and that sounds retarded, but it sounds like it felt like being hit with a sound wave. Mm-hmm. I mean, I physically felt the growl almost hit us. And Woody had turned over to me, and I remember he said that it had shaken the car. Well, it didn't shake the car, but I know it shook us. And I'm shaking at this point, and I'm trying to tell him, let's go. I'm done playing. Let's go. And it had moved up again. It was probably, and again, I'm just guessing on how close it was to the car, Seth. It felt like it was really, the last time it growled at us, it felt like it was like sitting in the back seat growling in our ear. So I know it was close. But the last time it had growled, I could have been in tears at the time, man. I was that scared. I mean, I was shaking. I was very, I could barely talk. I felt like, I just didn't, it's hard to express how you feel after something like that.
Yeah.
And at this point, we still really haven't seen anything. And I'm trying to figure out.
So this is all just audio.
Right.
And what you're feeling at that point.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we actually haven't seen anything yet.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden our guns aren't feeling that, you know, like they're, all of a sudden we don't feel like big and bad men anymore because our guns don't really feel like they're going to do much. This growl was, I know it had affected us. I told him to back the car up. Let's get out of here. I'm done with this. So he backs up and he's shaking and I'm shaking and he turns the car around. Now to get out of this place, there's only one road in and one road out. There's not like we could take another road out of here. We could back up and go find another path. There's only one way in, one way out of this place. So he backs up, he turns the car around, and now we're facing this direction. And the direction we're actually facing, the moon's coming in off to our left, and it's just lighting the whole place up. I mean, you can almost see better from the moonlight than you could with a flashlight. And it's just one of those conditions to where, I mean, we could just see everything. And he drives probably like 20 or 30 feet, and he stops the car, and he turns it off. And I'm like floored.
Did you just hear the chopper just fly by my house?
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Nice.
Gosh. I'm sorry. It was either that or one of your Bigfoot. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Growling at you.
Yeah.
No, he stops the car, and I'm swearing at him. I'm cussing him up, and I'm upset. I'm upset that he's not, because I'm ready to go. And he kind of looked over at me, and he's like, "Hey, man, I can't drive at the moment." He's like, I just need," and his hands were shaking. He was upset. I was upset. And I realized that if we had changed positions, I probably couldn't have driven us out. I mean, my hands were shaking. I was in no condition to, you know, because we're coming off this mountain, and it's not like there's street lights everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's curves, and, you can't just, you know, you might as well be drunk as opposed to upset. You just hurt a Bigfoot. You know, you'll never make it off this mountain unless you're really on top of your game coming down. So I just kind of sat there. And the weird thing about it, Seth, is I don't know if I believe in the infrasound. We've talked about it on the show, and I know a lot of Bigfoot researchers talk about it, but I just don't know. I don't know if it was fear or if it was actual infrasound. I remember as we were sitting there, I felt kind of ill, mm-hmm. and I felt exhausted, and I felt like someone just beat the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. And so both of us are just sitting there. He's looking up to his left, and on his side of the car, which was my side of the car now, there's these trees. So we're on a ridgetop. Right below us is another ridgetop. And he's sitting there, and he's looking up and looking up out his window off his driver's side. And he kind of looks over at me, and his face is completely white. And he says, do you see what I'm looking at over here? And I looked over on his side of the car, kind of lean over and look through the window. And it just kind of looked like a monkey in a tree. That's the only way I can describe it. It really wasn't that far away from us. It was probably maybe 20 feet up this tree or less. And the tree is only 20 feet away from us. Mm. But what it looked like was something a little bit bigger than me. I'm 6 foot. This thing was probably, and I'm guessing, maybe 6'5", 6'6", 300-400 pounds. But it looked like a monkey just up in a tree, and it was hanging on to the tree, hanging on to the trunk of the tree. And it was kind of look off to the left and kind of look down at us, then it look off to the right and look down at us. And it kept doing the shifting thing like it was trying to get a good look at us.
So how far up do you think it was?
Maybe 15, 20 feet. I mean, really wow. Not. It really wasn't that high up.
That's high, though. That's higher than I would imagine. I mean, when it's hanging onto the tree, is it kind of arms wrapped around it, legs wrapped around it, or is it...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, legs wrapped around, arms wrapped around. Maybe 15 feet up. Maybe, I guess I'd have to take tape measure, but I would guess 15, 20 feet up.
Now, were you guys seeing eye shine at that point or
no.
anything?
No. No.
Okay. All right.
No eye shine, no nothing. And I was just looking at this thing, and I was trying to figure out... It kind of moved like a monkey. You know, like I've seen, that's just kind of how it moved. It reminded me of a monkey in a tree, except for it was like my size, maybe a little bit bigger than me. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of sat down back in my chair, and it's like one of those moments to where you wish you had drank too much, or you had smoked too much, or you'd had way too much of something, to where you could go, well, you know, we were drinking, and this happened. The problem is we were completely sober, and this is happening. Mm-hmm. So you feel like you're losing your mind. You feel like you're completely losing it at that point, because you're like, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. And I looked back over at Woody, and I just, I don't know, man. I guess it's a monkey in a tree. I don't know what it is. And we had both looked back up to where it was at, and it was gone. And so we had this little conversation probably for 10, 15 seconds. We looked back up, and this thing's gone. And the part that bothers me is we both saw it. I mean, it'd be nice if he just saw it, and I'd be like, oh, you're crazy. You know, you didn't see anything. But we both had seen this thing, and our windows were still cracked at this point. And I, right after, off to my right, we could hear this thing breathing just inside the tree line. The thing in the tree was the only time we'd actually saw anything up to this point. But off to my right, we could hear this thing breathing in this tree line. And it sounded like a sick animal. It sounded, I've said, like a fat guy that just got in running a mile. Mm-hmm. I've said, kind of like Darth Vader, I guess. It would breathe in just as hard as it would breathe out. And we're sitting there, and I'm trying to tell Woody, hey, what do you think this is over here? What do you think's going on? And he would stop, and he'd kind of listen. And as we're listening to this breathing off in the tree line, out there there's these, I think they're birch trees, but they're white trees. And when the moon's coming in, it's light lit the whole area up. These trees stand out like a sore thumb. And in my rearview mirror on my side of the car, I was looking down, and there's three of them behind me. And about this time that we're trying to figure out where this breathing is coming from, something had run past behind the car and had actually taken up to where I couldn't see those trees anymore. And then it took off. And then it came back and it stood there for a little bit. And then it took off. And I'm looking at my mirror and I'm thinking, and my first thought was, okay, well, I'm freaking out here. Maybe my mind's playing tricks on me. But it happened a couple more times, and Woody had leaned over and said, "Hey, man, I think there's something surrounding the car again. Something's coming by in the car. I think we're being surrounded again." And I just told him, "I want to go. I want to leave. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to deal with this anymore. Whatever the hell is going on up at this mountain, I've had enough, and I know I don't really want to know what's going on up here." So we had decided to leave, and when we went to leave, this thing had stepped out in the road. And I can tell you it's the biggest thing I'd ever seen in my life. When it stepped out in this road, at the time we both said it was about 12 feet tall. But we went back and actually measured off of different markers that it was that, and it was actually 10. But at the time I would have said it was 12. Mm-hmm. It stepped out on the road, and this thing was ripped. I mean, this thing's shoulders were, I could have laid across its shoulders. It was the biggest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And it has it's facing us, and it steps out on the road, and its chest kind of reminded me of a bodybuilder. You know, a bodybuilder has a huge, wide, big chest, mm-hmm. and it went down into a V, and the thing was just ripped out. Its thighs were ripped out. There wasn't an ounce of fat on this thing.
Right. So things are, I'm sorry, in this area where you were, you said that it was a pretty, the moon was coming through, so there was plenty of light for you to be able to make this thing out.
Yeah.
Okay. And then at this point, are you still, obviously I would think that at this point, the thought that this was a human being is gone, right?
Yeah. The moment we saw it, I knew it wasn't a human being. Right. It was too big. Its proportions weren't the same as us. It's kind of proportioned like a cartoon. Mm-hmm. And that sounds ridiculous, but like its head, it seems like its head should have been bigger for what the body size was.
Yeah, you know, what's funny, you'd say that. I happened to go to the Cleveland Zoo today, and I was in the primate area for most of the day just because I've realized that I'm fascinated by primates, and we were looking at an orangutan, and I kept thinking that its head was way smaller than I would imagine it should be for its body, at least this one I was looking at. I've always seen them with a much larger head, and the one we saw today had a small head. And you said that about cartoonish. I can get that just from what I saw today. We were looking at this orangutan, and the first thing my wife said to me was, "It almost doesn't look real."
Yeah.
And if you're talking about a large, especially 10 foot tall bipedal primate, that is going to look unreal to you.
Yeah. Very unreal.
So
yeah, very, very unreal. Its proportion were its head should have, really should have been bigger for what the body was. Mm-hmm. They're from the, when you go from your upper arm to where your arm bends, and then you have your forearm.
Right.
Their forearm was a lot shorter than what it should have been. It seems like it should have been more, the upper arm was longer and the lower part of the arm was a lot shorter. It had five fingers. Its hands were huge.
Mm-hmm.
I remember counting all five fingers on its hand thinking, I really shouldn't be able to see this much detail from where I'm at.
How far down did the arms, where were the hands at in proportion to the knees? Was it down?
Not quite to the knees.
Okay.
A lot of people say that, and maybe some people have run into this, but I know with ours, it was a lot longer, almost to the knees, but not quite to the knees.
Okay.
But very out of proportion for what it should have been.
You didn't get a clear look at the one in the tree, right?
No, it was just wrapped around a tree.
Okay, I was trying to figure out if we had a comparison between the two of them.
No, so the one in the tree was about half the size of the
okay.
one we saw. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I
don't mean to keep interrupting. Are things that I've actually wondered when I've heard you tell this story before, so I'm actually getting to ask you.
Yeah, ask away, man. Ask away. Any questions? Its knees were bent the whole time, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
The way it walked was very awkward, compared to us.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with its legs. Its legs weren't, you know, your knee falls about 50% of the way down your thigh, and then you have your calf. That's not really the way it was proportioned. It's like the upper thigh was a lot longer than its lower leg.
Hmm.
So it was kind of out of proportion for what we would consider. I mean, when you see something upright walking, you immediately think, well, it should walk like I should. I walk. It should, you know, especially if it has five fingers. But this thing wasn't proportioned like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very odd. The way it walked was very odd. It reminded me when it walked across this road, and it would stop and look at us. And the moon was now coming in on it and kind of towards its back. And it would stop, and it would kind of look at us and kind of puff its chest out, kind of, you know, like you see in a guy in a bar that I used to be a bouncer. So
mm-hmm.
you see guys that puff their chest out, and, you know, all of a sudden they're ready, you know, they're big and bad. That's kind of what it reminded me of, the way this thing walked, the way it... Just its body language, it seemed like it wanted to fight.
And gorillas kind of have that same behavioral pattern when they're trying to be aggressive, I think, too. I've definitely seen that with gorillas.
Yeah.
Just real quick, how long do you estimate that you actually were looking at this thing? Because you said it walked back and forth, so...
Well, it had walked across the road. It didn't really walk back and forth. It walked across the road, but it would stop. The time... I can go into the time thing later with you mm-hmm. and give you a... Because there's a problem with the time that still bothers me to this day. But, I mean, maybe 20 minutes.
Okay, maybe you were actually looking at it for 20 minutes?
Maybe 15 minutes. Well, what it had done it... So it walked across this road, and on the other side of the road... There is a deadfall tree, and the tree stood about 8 feet up, eight and a half feet up, and it goes behind this thing, and the deadfall tree is right next to the road. Now, its shoulders are sticking out from this deadfall tree, its head's above the deadfall tree,
right?
So we can actually still see it, but it went behind this tree for whatever reason. It wasn't hiding behind there. I don't know why it went behind there, but it was standing behind this... kind of a deadfall tree, I guess. It would come out from behind that tree, and it would get down, kind of like you'd see a runner get down and pump, like it was gonna, like he's waiting for the gun to go off to take off running to do the sprint. That's kind of what it did. It would get down and kind of pump. It was down on all fours, and it would kind of pump like it was gonna charge us, and then it would stand up and it'd go behind this deadfall tree, and then just stand there,
mm-hmm.
and then it would come out, and it kept doing this. It would get down. Like it was going to charge us, and then it would go back. And we sat and watched this thing do this. Woody says 5, 6, 7 times. I think it was longer. I think we saw it a lot more than that, but I'll go with his estimate on it. But we watched this thing come out from behind this tree, and I thought for sure every time it was going to charge us. This thing was so big, Woody and I started arguing. He wanted to start the car and drive and go past it and just get off this mountain, I told him. No, man, this thing, look how big it is. It could, it was so big, it looked like it could pick the car up and toss us within it, with us in it, or flip the car over.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told him, absolutely not, man. We're not, until this thing leaves, man, you're great. Don't drive past it.
Were you still hearing the noises behind the truck or any other noise beside the one in front of you?
That's a good question. A lot of people, I don't think I've ever been asked that. There was a lot of stuff still going on around us.
Okay.
I can't really tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds like a retarded answer, but I can't really tell you what was going on because we were just so focused on King Kong in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my worry was. That's where my fear was. This is something I've never seen before. I don't know what's going on. But there was still stuff going on around us. If they were running around us, or my focus at the moment was on this thing because it was just so big.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question or not. It's not a good answer, but
yeah, no. How many do you think? I mean, you might have been getting to this one still, but how many? You saw the one in the tree. You think you heard one behind the truck, and then you had the one in front of you. So you think there were three, or do you think there were more?
I think there was four for sure.
Okay.
Because when we're sitting in the car at the very beginning, around the car, I know there was three definite footsteps coming in on us, and then behind the car, this huge one started coming up on us. So I know there was four for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Whether there was more than that, we had actually only seen three that night, but I'm pretty sure there was four.
Okay. I mean, keep going with your story, but I want to get to what your theory on what exactly they were even doing up there is, because I don't know that I've heard you talk about that either, but I want to, there's some follow-up stuff I want to talk to you about, but keep going with what you were saying.
So we're sitting there, we're watching this thing coming from behind this tree, acting like it was going to charge us, and finally it went behind the tree, and so to kind of describe the area, we're on a ridgetop, and right below us is another little ridgetop, and then it kind of goes straight up this mountain. There's little cliffs and whatnot. And as we're sitting there, this I say light gray. Woody says it was white, but I'm pretty sure it was light gray. Jumps off from kind of the same area this big one had stepped out of from, but it was higher up. If we were there, I could show you the cliff it jumped off of. It jumped off this thing, and we see it in midair, and it just, it wasn't as big as the one that was in the road, I can tell you that. It was very slender, it was slimmer, it was kind of skinny, but it kind of jumped like a person. It jumped, and its legs were spread out, its arms were spread out, almost like it was in a leap, and it lands one time in this road, and the way it bounced off this road is very, disturbing. It's like it bounced off of it like it was a trampoline, and then it took off over towards the riverside, and it literally just, we saw it midair, we saw it land, we saw it bounce, and then we see it take off through the brush, and it was gone. And about that time is when the big one came out, and he wasn't doing the runner's pump anymore. He was facing us, and I thought for sure it was like one of those Mexican standoffs. I thought for sure we were going to have to start shooting this thing. And he dropped to all fours. But it happened so quick, and it was so almost disturbing to watch him drop to all fours. It happened within a blink of the eye. He's down on all fours. And the way he's crawling around on all fours seemed very, very natural. Almost the same way he was up walking around. It was very... bam, he can walk on all fours just as well as he can be up on all 2 feet. And the one thing I remember when he was on all fours, he's facing us, and his chest is to the ground, and I remember seeing his fingers, and he dropped kind of like a spider, and he was kind of crawling using his fingertips, and he crawled halfway out into the road, and he's still facing us the whole time. We're still parallel right with him. He never turned his body, and he stops for a second. And then he crawled off into the brush, and he was gone. And that's when I told Woody, go, get out of here. We're in Alice in Wonderland at this point, man. Get out of here. Let's get out of here. So he starts the car up, and he guns it down the mountain. I know you had asked me about the time. When we got to the spot, Seth, it was 2. When he left, it was almost 5. And so that's the only part of the story that bothers me. It's not like we were taking an alien ship. It's not like we, nothing odd happened. It's just I can't really tell you what happened to the time, because the encounter only seemed like it really should have taken maybe 40 minutes. And there's 3 hours that you really can't account for. I can't tell you. The whole time it was like one thing after another that we were there, that things were happening. But it doesn't seem like it should have taken that long. So, I don't know to give you an answer on, well, how long do you think he saw the big one? It seemed like forever, man. It was too long, I can tell you that much.
Right. Is Woody's perception of that time about the same as yours? I mean, is he saying 15, 20 minutes that thing was in it blocking your road?
Yeah, he's 15, 20 minutes. Okay. He would say that's about how long. But then, like I said, man, it's 3 hours that I can't really account for. So I feel like a fool saying how long. It was a long time. The thing sat there. It wasn't like a minute or two. I mean, this thing sat there and we couldn't leave. So we felt like we couldn't anyway.
When you left, you took off out of there. You went home or whatever. Did you call forestry? What did you do?
Well, the first thing that happened is I went home. And I remember I talked to my, which is now my ex-wife, but I talked to my wife at the time, and she said I was white as a ghost, and my hands were shaking, my knees were shaking, and she kept asking me, she's like, were you out drinking? Were you out doing, you know? I was like, no, we weren't. She's like, well, where you guys been? And I was trying to tell her what happened, but I was so upset. I mean, I could barely talk. And it took about 3 hours for my legs. My knees were knocking together. My hands were shaking. And it was later that day I'd called Fish and Game. And when I called Fish and Game, Washington State Fish and Game, I talked to this first guy and basically told him, hey, man, I don't know what we ran into. We ran into something. There's monsters. And I'm just rambling like a million miles an hour off to this guy. And he says, well, hold on a second. I'll put you in touch with, I don't remember what the guy's name was. It was the old man that got on the phone. And so I start telling this old guy what happened. And the whole time I'm telling him, hey, man, there's monsters up there. I don't know. And so he says, well, calm down. Tell me a little story. So I go through the whole story with him. And he says, well, it sounds like you guys had a Sasquatch encounter. I need the GPS locations of where this happened. And I said, well, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, man. Sasquatch or whatever. There's monsters up there, man. Someone's going to wind up dead. And I'm not going back up to get the GPS. And so he said, well, go back up and get the GPS. And so we kind of argued back and forth about getting the GPS, which we eventually did. It took us about a week later that we did. But they had called. He had said, one thing he had said to me, which I found kind of fascinating, is he said, Wes, we'll look into it and we'll take care of it. And I thought, well, I don't know what that I don't know what that means. But they had called Woody, and Woody had basically gone through the whole story with them, and they told him the same thing. We'll look into it and we'll take care of it. Hmm. And eventually got the GPS, called back, gave it to him, and that was kind of it. It never, nothing really ever happened of it, mm-hmm. that I know of. Hmm.
All right. All right. So moving on from that, let's get away from the sighting for a minute. We'll come back to it because I do want to know some follow-up things. But what was it then that got you into, because you went from having your sighting to having a blog talk radio show about Bigfoot. I don't know what happened between, I don't know that I've ever heard you really talk on the show anyway, about what got you from having your sighting to actually being to the point where you were that into it that you wanted to talk about it on the internet. What got you to that point?
It took me a while. It really did take me a while because I didn't really, I know we had contacted a Bigfoot group and I told them the whole story here in Washington. And I told them the same thing I told Fish and Game, hey man, we'll take a lie detector test, we'll take a drug test, whatever you guys want to test us, we'll take. And so it took me a long time. When I'd come back, I'd sold all my hunting gear at about $10,000 in hunting equipment. I think I sold it all for maybe $800. And I was done. I didn't want to go in the woods anymore. I was done. And Woody was the one that really pushed me to want to get back out there. Let's figure out what this thing is. Let's figure out what's going on. And we'd gone up a few other times to Yakult Mountain. But I started listening to a lot of Bigfoot podcasts. And one of the ones I started listening to was The Tonight Show with Chuck Prahl, who has since passed away. And I called into his show. And I started listening to all these shows. And I started thinking, you know, where do you go to talk to someone about this? Who do you actually go to if you've had an encounter and people to where people won't call you crazy? And I told Woody, let's start our own show and let's see if we can get people to talk about their encounters. It's taken almost a year and a half for, you know, I'm flooded now with emails and people that want to talk about it. But that's kind of how we got into it. It wasn't, you know, like I said, the beginning shows were terrible, but it was kind of a learning process. But that's kind of how we, it's almost therapy to talk about it and to have other people talk about it. You know, when someone's had an encounter and the moment they start talking, I can relate to exactly what they're saying because I've seen it. I know exactly how they feel. I know exactly how they're, what's going through their mind. And that's kind of how we got started with the whole blog talk radio thing, the whole podcast.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by that dichotomy between the stories, though, because what you're saying is true. There are a lot of the stories like yours, and I've heard others, but then you do have these stories where people just see a Bigfoot wandering off across the field, or not the Ostman sighting. I always forget. Fred, no, not the Fred Beck. I can't remember the guy in the field that saw him, you know, years ago. We talked about it in one of the earlier episodes. It's like one of the famous sightings. But there's that, even the PGF, I mean, it's just a Bigfoot walking across a creek bed. You do have those. There's so many things about this subject that throw me. See, I'm not a believer. I don't think I would call myself a believer even if I'd seen one, just because I hate the term believer. It strikes me as religious.
Well, this interview is done.
but like I'm also totally open to the fact that they might exist, and I think there's a lot of credible people like yourself who are telling us stories about seeing them, and I want to know what, you know, I would love to see one of these things, and I hope they exist. From my own personal opinion, I would love to know that they're out there, because I think it is just absolutely awesome that there's this undiscovered beast roaming the forest, right? But I'm not a believer. So what I want to know is, like, why are there so many of these things that are almost like a puzzle, where you have one person is describing one characteristic that is completely contradicted by another person? And I'm talking about credible people, too, not the people who are, you know, describing them as, you know, hopping through dimensions or coming back from, you know, Mars or whatever. You know, it's one of those things, because you would think as an animal would behave similarly, right? I mean, most bear encounters, I guess that's not necessarily true, though, because you have violent bear encounters, and then you have bear encounters where, you know, I don't know, people dance with them, right? That's a thing. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many mysteries connected to this thing.
Yeah, there is. I think what you're trying to say is sometimes people have violent encounters, or what they perceive to be violent encounters, and then you have other encounters where it just seems to walk away, like
right, Patterson. It's just an animal. Yeah.
The thing with the Patterson film, though, is, and I talked to Bob Gimlin about this, I know Will's talked about it on her show, is one thing that's fascinating is Roger Patterson, before he died, on his deathbed, he said, Bob would have shot that, what we now know as Patty. Mm-hmm. I wish he would have shot it, because then we would have had the proof. He thought the film was enough proof. And when I talked to Bob said the reason why he didn't shoot, it wasn't coming at, you know, Bob's a nice guy. He didn't have it in him just to pick off something, just to shoot it. Right. But Bob said he was frightened because they heard three others around them in the brush. And he was afraid that if he took that shot, what would actually happen to him at that point. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of different encounters you hear of people to where, you know, I've heard some to where, and a lot of people have told me this type of encounter to where they come face to face with Sasquatch. They're surprised. Sasquatch is surprised. They scream. Sasquatch screams. And then they both run the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never going to be simple, straightforward answer when you're dealing with a primate. You know, when you talk about humans, it's like, well, why is Seth such a nice guy and why is Wes such a It's
I hear it all the time. I've never been asked that, by the way.
But you know what I mean? It's like,
right,
you know, when you're talking with a primate, it's never going to be a straightforward answer. They do A, so B happens when this happens. And it's not that way with any human you put in the same category. People react different ways. People respond different ways. People are in different moods. And I think we're dealing with, you know, I honestly think we're dealing with a primate that has a lot of the same characteristics we do.
Mm-hmm. A complicated primate.
Very complicated. Too.
I mean, if this thing exists, it's got to be, its intellect has to be through the roof. I mean, not human levels, but it's got to be one of the smartest animals on the planet.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. We were out at the Browns property. Sarah and John's property. Mm-hmm. And we kept hearing this monkey chatter. And I call it monkey chatter. I guess some people call it the samurai chatter. Mm-hmm. But we'd kind of hear it off in the distance. And we'd hear it all around us at times. And John and Woody and I were sitting up in this tree, kind of a tree stand. And John scans across this field and he says, "Hey, check this out. You know, what do you see?" And he's looking through a thermal. And it's at night. And I see what looks kind of like a blob squatch standing out in the middle of this field. And it, I mean, the heat signature is just lighting right up. It looks like kind of like a big person standing out there looking at us. And it's probably 250 yards out, maybe 200 yards out. And on those thermals, at least on his, you couldn't zoom in on it, so we couldn't really get any details, but it was obvious, two legs, two arms, big body, and it was looking at us. Now, if you know John's property, no one's going to be out there in the middle of the night. No one's going to just go walking through this area in the middle of the night. A, you kind of have to go through his front yard to get to the spot, but B, it's in the middle, literally in the middle of nowhere. And so we all decided, well, let's jump down, let's go check it out. And I have the thermal, and John's saying, don't take your eyes off of it, you know, don't let this thing run, let's go in for a closer look. And we're armed to the teeth, by the way, just so people out there know. And I'm like, okay, well, I got it, you know. So as we're walking towards this thing, off to our left, and we'd heard this monkey chatter all day long. Off to our left, it sounded like it was probably like 50 feet away. And in this field, it's not an even field. So I could step out like 50 feet away, 30 feet away, and I could lay down in one of the goalies. You know, it kind of goes like this. I could lay down in one of the goalies, and you'd never see me. And we hear this monkey chatter, and we all stop. Well, like an idiot, I stop, and I put the thermal over there, and I'm scanning for this thing because it sounds like it's right up on us. And I don't see anything. And then I go back to put the thermal back on what we were heading towards, and it's gone. So, I mean, was it a Sasquatch? I think it was. Can I prove it was? I can't. But the chatter we heard, what we saw standing in the field, but that just kind of shows you the, you know, how do you get three or more morons to stop heading towards your buddy? Well, you make a little noise over here, and like idiots, they'll all stop and look. And that's kind of, after I had time to think about it, I was like, you know, it was intentional to make us stop and look over in this direction and stop heading towards this thing. That, I mean, that, and it might be more of an impression, but that was my impression of what was going on.
Have you thought about what, the night of your sighting, what was going on up there? I mean, on the, was it a mountain you were on?
Yeah. It was a small mountain.
I mean, do you think it was a family group? Do you think it was, you know, were they growing pot? Were the Bigfoot growing pot up on the mountain? You know, have you given it much thought?
Yeah, I think if I were to guess, I would say family group. And I'm just guessing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. They seem to work well with each other, and they seem to move like the like special forces at night. It's almost like everyone kind of knew what they were doing. But I think what honestly happened is so on the ridgetop we were on, if you step down, you go down to the next ridgetop, it's kind of a ridgetop. The Lewis River's right there. And in that area right there, I mean, you could scoop up the water and drink it right there. You can get fish. I think they were heading down towards the river. I know Will thinks we had interrupted a hunt. We had pulled up and just kind of stumbled into the middle of what was going on. That might have happened. I think we cut them off from going to the river is what I think happened. They were coming down off that mountain, heading down towards the river. And I think we unintentionally cut them off. Because when we had gone back, we've gone back several times. One time we'd went back, I told Woody, I bet you $100 are coming up and down the mountain right here. Which was coincidentally right where we had stopped the car. And we had actually got some pretty good photographs of footprints going up and down the mountain right there. Different sizes going up and down the mountain right in that spot. I think that's what happened. I mean, I'm just speculating on it, right. But I think that's
right.
What happened.
That's like 99% of what we do, right? Because we don't know anything. So, I mean, a lot of what we're doing is speculation on why or what the behavior is. And have you guys gone back to that spot multiple times? I mean, if it was, you know, from my point of view, if it was me and I'd seen them there, I would be there constantly. Although if I had had the encounter you guys did, maybe I would just never be interested in the subject at all.
Well, it took me about 6 months. Mm-hmm. It took me about, we'd gone up a few times and I really didn't want to be there. I think it was about a month and a half after our encounter, we'd went back up and we'd seen another guy driving off the mountain like we did that night, going 90 miles an hour coming down off this mountain. He was either drunk or something had happened to him because he was just balls out coming down this mountain. Mm-hmm. And we've gone up there a few times. We've heard, we've had rocks thrown at the car. We've heard what I describe as a lion's roar way up in the hills. You can hear this thing just roar, just going off. But it honestly, it took me about 6 months before I was kind of okay with going back up there. We'd gone a few times prior to that 6 month period, but I really was never super comfortable with being there, especially at night. I did not want to be there at night. Mm-hmm. It's that you go through this weird transformation, man. When you've had an encounter, it's like, I almost didn't want anything to do with it. And I was terrified to talk about it. You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to go back out in the forest again. And now it just kind of fascinates me now. So we do go up there a lot, but, not as much as I'd like.
So what do you actually go on expeditions, or do you guys just go out and camp and try to have encounters, or do you even do that sort of thing anymore?
As far as expeditions, we're trying to get one together for the show to have listeners come out and do something like that. Lately, it seems like we've been going out to a lot of different properties. I know, like, the Browns is one of them. We've gone out to two others, and where it seems like they have stuff going on all the time. So as far as expeditions, we haven't done a lot of expeditions. I would like to, personally. I think it'd be kind of cool to go out. And, you know, expedition's just a fancy word for a camping trip.
Exactly.
But but it would be fun to...
We just ticked off like 30 BFRO members.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can send your hate mail to SethBreedlove@yahoo.com.
That's my actual email address,
too. Is it really? Yeah, it's just a fancy, and that maybe that's why we don't, people on that are really in depth in the community don't love us is mm-hmm. because of comments like that. It's like, really, it's just a fancy camping trip. Come on, who are you guys playing? Who are you guys trying to joke around with here? You know what I mean? You're not, and no one's an expert, and people don't like to hear that they're not experts. it really pisses people off when you just kind of, say, well, you're speculating now. You don't really know. You're speculating.
Right.
And people don't like to hear that, so.
Right.
But, yeah, if you got an expedition, man, I'll come.
I'll bring the beer. I have never been. My expeditions would be me walking around in the woods and eating a lot of Snickers bars.
Well, if I'm in Ohio, man, I'll look you up. Let's do it.
We'll go down to Salt Fork, which people think is the mecca of Bigfooting in Ohio. But
I've heard that.
Yeah. I'm more skeptical of Salt Fork. I think there's too many Bigfooters there.
Really?
I think there's too many Bigfooters, and I think there's too many people that know that that is a Bigfoot hot spot in this state. I mean, almost everyone that comes to... Just look at TripAdvisor. Go to, like, TripAdvisor and read reviews of Salt Fork State Park. You'll read review after review that makes mention of... there being Bigfoot activity there. However, that doesn't mean I don't think there have been Bigfoots, if they exist, in that place, or that there aren't even today, because I think these things move constantly. I think they kind of have to. I'm not necessarily into the migration theory, but I'm saying I think they move a lot. I think they'd have to.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
So I think they probably move through a lot of areas. We have this Cuyahoga Valley National Park right near where I live, and that's kind of my... area where I go now. That's where I do all my hiking, so that's kind of my place to look for Bigfoot. And I think 33,000 acres of heavily wooded area would be a great place for him to be. So
you should come to Washington, man. I'll show you some stuff, make you change your mind on a lot of things.
I believe you. that's a dream of mine, is to get out there someday. So I mean, see, the thing about it is, I hate the word believer. I'm not a believer. If you're putting a percentage on it, right now I'm probably like 65%. Yeah. A year ago I was at like 87%. I mean, I was 87% convinced that these things are out there.
What right changed? Now I'm 85 down. To 67.
Yeah, I'm just down. I'm down.
What's
to,
up with that?
I think it's the fact that I have been out this year more than any other year, and I have not seen or heard or felt anything I would directly associate with Bigfoot, and that, or that I couldn't at least come up with alternate explanations. And I grew up in a fairly rural community with a massive woods right behind my house that I spent day after day in growing up, right on the Tuscarora River, right at the tip. Have you heard about the Sasquatch Triangle in Ohio?
Yeah. Yep.
It's right at the tip top of the Sasquatch Triangle. And I never saw or heard anything growing up. So I don't know what it is about the last year that... Maybe it's not the last year. I think it's actually the last 2 months. And it might be more my own disillusion with the community.
You got to stay away from that stuff, man. That'll burn you out pretty quick.
I guess. It's like I think I see what other people are calling evidence a lot of times. And I'm like, what? This is... Yeah. A stump. You're posting another picture of a stump.
Ed Waterman.
name check on the show. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's. I think the fascinating part about this, and to be honest with you, prior to our encounter, mm-hmm. we had hunted everywhere. I mean, I felt like we had hunted everywhere. We'd been in places I know a lot, no one's. Well, I won't say no one. Most people haven't been. And we were in a lot of deep areas of the forest. And if you'd asked me probably around 2012, prior to our encounter, I would have given it about a 5% chance that, I mean, I was 5%, I was kind of open to it, but I was, you know, I've kind of been everywhere, I haven't really seen anything. And I think that having that skepticism like you have is a good thing. I think that everyone should have that. Even after you've had an encounter, I think it's good to be skeptical on what you see and hear. It's just fascinating to hear so many anecdotal stories. And I know that isn't proof, but, I mean, is everyone lying? Is everyone out there lying? You know, I had a cop that I'm going to have on Sunday, and he's a cold case detective, and he's ex-Delta Force. And he was telling us about encounters he's had with them and encounters that some of his Special Forces buddies had when they were sent out to Mount Hood to kill one. Because it was attacking people in campsites. The people were having runs with them. And so if you've never had an encounter, you hear something like that, you're like, well, what do I make of this? You know, here's a guy that really has nothing to gain except for losing his career. And, I mean, he has everything to lose by talking about it. And so I think those are the things. I think when people are skeptical, all of the BS that you see in the community, all of the, well, here's a stump and there's 8 Sasquatches that just turned into this one stump. Those are the things that kind of make people who haven't seen them go, well, this is BS. These people are crazy.
Yeah.
I've seen them, and I think half the people in the community are crazy.
I hope I get to the bottom of it someday. It's one of those things. Stories like yours keep me going. You know, stories like yours, the NAWAC, the stuff they've got going on in Area X, guys like Will and you and Woody. I mean, your story is so fascinating just because it's one of the only ones that I've heard like this. You know, where it's this prolonged period of time and there's multiple subjects, and it's just very unique in that way. I heard someone else talk about this just in the last couple of days. They were out in the woods, and they were in what they felt was a Bigfoot situation. They thought that it almost sounded like something picked up a boulder and then smashed it against the ground. I think what they actually said is that they felt it as much as they heard it. Have you ever heard that sort of thing before?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories like that, to where, I mean, a lot of stories like that, to where they're, as far as the boulders, you know, picking up boulders, smashing them. God, I can tell you, like the Browns property, one thing that you'll hear a lot is it sounds like rocks being smashed together, big rocks being smashed together. And John and I were sitting in his little gazebo one night, and we heard that. I don't know what to, I mean, did they smash rocks? I don't know. Could it have been something else? Well, what else could it have been? It sounded like something was taking a huge boulder and just smashing it repeatedly over another huge boulder. But there's a lot of stories like that. There's a lot of stories. Believe it or not, there's a lot of stories like Woody and I's encounter. I had a gentleman, speaking of the forensic cold case detective that I had on, his brother was up at Mount St. Helens. And he was sitting in a, they had set up a campsite. Actually, excuse me, Mount Rainier. They had set up a campsite. And this, they had left to go get beer. And were heading back. And when they had gotten back, this, something had destroyed their camp. Thrown the taken their cooler, which was full, and thrown it. Just completely destroyed their camp. So they're thinking, well, it's a bear. We got a bear problem. So they ran back up to the store to get food because all their food had been thrown out everywhere. And they cleaned up the campsite. And they decided, hey, instead of staying in the tent, let's stay in the back of this camper, in the back of this guy's truck. And so they're sitting in the back of this truck, and they're starting to fall asleep. And this guy's, his brother's actually Special Forces, too. He's in the military. He was on leave from Fort Lewis. And these guys are both hunters, so they're sleeping in the back of their camper. Well, they start hearing this thing pacing around their truck, and it sounds like two footsteps walking around their truck. And that's kind of how he describes it. He could almost feel it more than he could hear this bipedal footsteps walking around his truck. So as they're laying there, it starts rocking the truck. And so he takes his flashlight and he leans up and he looks out one of the side windows. And he's face to face with this thing. And he goes into a really good description of what he saw. He describes a nose, describes a mouth, describes the eyes, describes everything that he'd seen. And this thing bared its teeth at him and started growling at him. And he clicked the flashlight off, and right as he's starting to duck underneath, get back in his sleeping bag, like we've all ran like schoolgirls, he's running like a schoolgirl, and I'm making light of it because I probably would have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. But he's running back into his sleeping bag, and this thing starts smashing his camper down from the top, and it completely destroyed the top of the camper. And this thing sat there for 3 hours while these guys were in this camper. And he said, we could actually barely get out of the camper because it had been smashed down on top of them. It was knocking the truck, trying to tip the truck over. It was banging on the truck. And he says it circled around his truck and it would smash its fist down on the back of his camper. Hmm. And it wasn't until almost daylight before this thing left. And he sent me pictures of his camper. And it looks like King Kong went ape crazy all over this camper is what the best way I can describe it. And he eventually turned it into the insurance company and just told them it was a bear because they're not going to pay for, well, Sasquatch destroyed my truck. So he told them it was a bear.
Oh man. But Sasquatch insurance would be through the roof. I mean, you'd be screwed the monthlies on that. Imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, this whole thing of them hanging around and I'd say most of the encounters are fleeting glimpses, but there is a lot of encounters where they aren't fleeting glimpses. These things hang around, and it kind of turns into a Mexican standoff, like who's going to make the wrong decision first. And his encounter, it lasted. I mean, he said the things hung around till almost daylight. Right before daylight started coming up, it took off, and they got in their truck and left. He said he's never been camping since. He's never been hunting since. He refuses to go out. He's up at Fort Lewis. And he refuses to go out unless they're in, unless he's well armed.
All right, we're going to start to wrap it up. I want to know if you're talking to a newbie, someone who's just getting into this subject, what advice would you give them?
The best advice I would give them, not that, you know, many people come to me for advice, but the best.
I just did.
The best advice I would give them is if they're out in the woods is be careful. I would not go out unarmed. And if you really want to see one, and I say it on the show all the time, be careful what you wish for because it might just happen. And when it happens, you better have your wits about you because I think things can change pretty quick. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of things can go bad pretty quick. And so my best advice to people would be, people say treat them with respect, but I say treat them with respect in the sense of a grizzly bear. You know, if you go out looking for a grizzly bear, be careful because you might actually run into one and it may not go well. You know, this whole tree knocking business and this whole doing calls, and I think all of that's a joke. I really do. I think it's a joke. But that's my own personal opinion.
Right.
Only, you know, maybe about 5% of people care.
I'm one of them. All right. Hey, thanks for coming on, though. It was awesome.
Yeah, man. I love the podcast.
Join the conversation at facebook.com/sasswhat. Find us on Twitter by using the hashtag SassWhat, or you can find me on Twitter at SethBreedsLove. Mark Matsky is on Twitter at ReverendMatsky. Send your letters to SassWhatMail@gmail.com and leave us a rating and review on iTunes.